Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bock.
Good afternoon, everybody. I want to welcome you to a special edition here of Grinders Live. I am Dan Bock, and of course, it's been a crazy week here in the world of daily fantasy sports. And you know what? We're really excited to be able to sit down and talk it over a little bit with the man over there at DraftKings. He is their CEO, Jason Robbins, and he's been nice enough to say that he's going to take some of the questions that you guys put forth out there in the forums here over the last 24 hours. And we're going to answer some of those questions. Jason, thanks again for, being so transparent and talking with us here today.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
All right. We've only got 30 minutes, folks. So there's no way we're going to be able to get through every single question. So I picked out several of yours, kind of cleaned up a few that I thought could have been worded better. And we'll go from there. So let's get started. Obviously, you've talked to ESPN, you've talked to Fox Business, and one thing that you've been very vocal about is the mass media's poor reporting and the fact that they unfairly, in your estimation, dragged Ethan through the mud. But my question is, like, do you guys think that you should take a little bit of responsibility for yourself for not addressing this a little bit sooner? And why did you guys take so long before you came out and gave a statement? Because I felt like that was part of the problem.
You know, I think the main reason that we wanted to take a few days to address this publicly is we wanted to make sure we had the facts straight. This is a really important thing. I feel terrible, absolutely terrible that this is happening. I feel terrible for Ethan, certainly, but I also feel terrible for our customers, for the Roto Grinders and player community. I know that not everybody necessarily gets to see the people who work here day to day, but we have a great group, and they have been working around the clock for the last 3 years, really, to try to create the best possible customer experience. And I realize we still have a lot of work to do there, and we're by no means finished. And again, anyone who's been following our product knows we're constantly adding new sports, new features, enhancing it. But what I will say is that even though we still have a lot of work to do, everyone here is driven by one mission, one mission only, and that's to create an incredible fantasy product for our customers. And most of us were players before. I certainly was, and I don't play anymore in any public sites. But many of the employees here enjoyed playing, and we, along with everyone else in the industry, did not prohibit that. And so this kind of caught us off guard when this happened. I think, in retrospect, we should have probably seen it coming. And I think others, throughout the industry that also allowed their employees to play probably should have seen it coming, but we didn't. And when it happened, we were kind of caught off guard. So the first thing we did is we all huddled together and we said, look, this has resulted in Ethan being criticized pretty harshly. And, I think for most people who haven't been through this, they don't realize what happens in a situation like that. I mean, Ethan had reporters camped outside his parents' home. They were just, it was a really, really tough time for him. And we wanted to be able to come out with an incredibly strong statement in defense of Ethan, but we needed to make sure that that was true. Nothing would have been worse if we came out and said, hey, back off this guy. He's innocent. This is unfair. And then we found out that wasn't the case. And I've known Ethan for many years. So just from knowing him, I didn't believe that that was the case at all. But, I had to make sure there's nothing, like I said, that would have been worse than us coming out and making really, really strong statements only to find out that we messed up. And any credibility that we want to create going forward with people is going to have to come from us being 100% open, 100% transparent, honest, and accurate in what we say. If we start reporting things and it later becomes clear that that isn't true, or we start saying, oh no, but this happened too, or that happened, then we're going to lose a lot of credibility with people. So, you know, I'm sorry that it took a little longer to respond than I would have liked. And I think for us, you know, a little bit of a lesson learned that maybe we should have come out ahead of time and said, hey, we're investigating this. But, you know, what I wanted to be able to do was come out very strongly and say, and I was thinking first and foremost of Ethan, because, you know, all the things that are going to come up beyond that, just, you know, an investigation of any other people who are looking at data, other policies and procedures that maybe need to be looked at. Those are all fair questions. And those are things that, you know, we need to do a good job creating confidence in people that we are handling and we're continuing to always improve on. But the first thing that came to my mind was, I've known Ethan for years and I absolutely hate to see what's happening to him. It was sad. And he's handled it great. He's been, you know, about as strong and as you know, honest and open as you possibly could have asked. But you know, it really made me sad to see it. And I really just, the first thing that came to me is, I want to make sure that we do a thorough investigation so I know if this is true or not. And if it's not, I am going to come out strong and I am going to criticize all the people that, before any of the facts were properly reviewed, came out and attacked this kid and made him out to be, you know, the villain of the industry. And as soon as we had that information, you saw in the last couple of days, that's what we've done. And, you know, I want to make sure, because there was so much coverage, you know, that sullied his name, we need to put just as much effort in the media to clearing his name. And that doesn't take away from the fact that all this broader discussion on the need for better, you know, compliance procedures, the need for better policies, and the need to create more openness and transparency is still there. And I think that that's a fair discussion. And we're going to do everything we possibly can to make everyone out there feel 100% confident that they can trust that Daily Fantasy is a safe and fair product, that they can trust that DraftKings and everyone else in the industry are doing all the right things to make sure that, you know, any sort of misuse of information is rooted out and immediately squashed. And I think the step that we and FanDuel took of, you know, creating a permanent prohibition on our employees from playing on other people's websites is going to be a big step towards that. But it's not enough. That may have solved this particular problem. But naturally, questions have to, well, how are we going to enforce it? How are we going to make sure that people don't, you know, take things that they learn here and pass them along to friends or family members and they use them for purposes that shouldn't be? And obviously, you can never be 100%. I mean, you know, as strong as classified access is in the American government, there have been plenty of cases where people got caught spying. I mean, every single system has some sort of point of failure and it's never 100%, but we better do everything we can to make sure that we are as close to 100% as humanly possible. And we need to have very clear policies so that anyone who's ever caught doing anything has stiff penalties that are very clear and that demotivate that sort of behavior. And I just want everyone out there to know that this is my personal commitment I'm making to all of you, that you know, while certainly there were some things that we were doing that were good in this area, we weren't doing enough and we're going to do better. And we're going to help not only do better at DraftKings, but we are going to work alongside everyone else in the industry to make these set of best practices and standard industry-wide, because this isn't just about DraftKings or FanDuel. This is about anyone playing anywhere in daily fantasy. And, you know, even though DraftKings and FanDuel were the two involved here, there are still other places that I think also people enjoy playing. And what our goal is, and we're working very closely alongside FanDuel in this, what I really appreciate about this is motivated a ton of collaboration between the two companies.
Sure.
We're working together to establish what those procedures and policies should be. And we're going to help evangelize that and institutionalize that throughout the entire daily fantasy industry.
All right, we've got a lot of stuff to hit up here. I want to start with the data. You know, the percent owned data was a huge talking point over the last few days, but a lot of people, including myself, think maybe the larger issue is whether the lineups themselves can be viewed by people behind the scenes before the games start. What is the security protocol around that? And do employees have access to this and other highly sensitive information? And how do you document it?
So first of all, we have always had really strong monitoring and record keeping. We can tell who accesses data, when they access it, what they did with it, if they sent it to anybody. We can tell if they did this for legitimate business purposes or not, because we also document legitimate reasons that they would need to have that. So, for example, if we see that a customer service agent looked at somebody's lineup, we can check and see, was there an inquiry made at around the same time by a customer that would have needed to have somebody go look at the lineup? If a customer wrote in and said, hey, you know, I have XYZ question about my lineup, I thought I changed it, but it, you know, I can't tell because whatever the reason may be, I'm making stuff up. And then, you know, around the same time, that was when it was accessed. Then that's pretty good evidence that it was done for a legitimate purpose. On the other hand, if we find that people were looking at some of the best players in the industry's lineups and there's absolutely no real business purpose that we can, you know, find that matches up with that, then that was not an ethical behavior. So I think that to start, the good news is that we have always had really good monitoring and record keeping in place. So this is not going to be something where we're going to come back to you guys and say, well, we don't know. We don't have the data. We have it. And we are going to look back and find out not just what happened in this case. We're going to do a full audit of anybody who has ever accessed any sensitive data anytime. And we are going to find out exactly who did it for legitimate purposes. And we are going to find out if there was anybody that did it for any illegitimate purposes. And the other thing that we commit to everybody is we are going to be extraordinarily open and transparent about those findings. If it's a clean bill of health, then we'll tell you. But if we find some places where there were bad actors, we are also going to tell you, because the only way that we are going to create as much trust as possible is if people know that good or bad, whatever we find, it's being shared. And so that's our commitment to do that. And even though I wish that we had instituted this policy where employees couldn't play on other sites, I mean, I think this would have solved a lot of the problem, because now we wouldn't have to be going back and checking and seeing did anyone, you know, use this stuff for illegitimate reasons. The policy wasn't in place. It wasn't just for us. It was something around the whole industry. And you know, I think the companies need to work together now to deduce whether there was any foul play at hand. And then if there is any detected, we need to take swift action to correct it. And most importantly, we need to make sure that everything that we do going forward creates an atmosphere that people can trust is fun and enjoyable and fair.
So is it safe to say you didn't have that monitoring in place before right now?
No, we wouldn't be able to go back and do this if we didn't have it in place.
No, I mean, in terms of somebody overlooking and following who's accessing what data.
So we have always had periodic and through our fraud team, we've always had periodic checks of things. But generally, it's been hard because you can't look at every single time somebody, you know, we get thousands, tens of thousands of customer service inquiries a day. And, you know, we have engineers that are constantly doing things in the database. So what we had done before is spot checks. I think if you don't have employees playing on other websites, then you know, this wouldn't have been something that even would be questionably coming up. But and I do believe that through spot checking, and we have flags and things in place that would, you know, flag anything that looks suspicious, that probably most of the stuff that could have occurred we would have spotted. But I honestly can't sit here and guarantee that we're not going to find anything. What I will guarantee is that we will find something if it did happen now. And I realize that, you know, that is not something that people may like to hear. They may say, look, you know, I wish you guys had had a, you know, exact sort of policies and procedures in place before that didn't even allow for any of this to happen. But this has been a learning experience for us and for the whole industry. And, you know, what I can also tell you is that we're not just doing this ourselves. We're working with the other key companies in the industry, and they're performing similar back audits. And the last point I want to make here is this isn't just us doing it ourselves. I think the other thing that should inspire confidence is we have contracted with with a law firm called Greenberg Traurig. They're a very well-respected law firm. And a guy, John Papalardo, who has a rich history and experience in doing these types of things. And we are going to turn over all of our data to them in an unfettered way. And they are going to do a completely independent report, and we will share the findings of that with you as well. So, you know, if there's something out there, they're going to find it, we're going to find it. And I hope I can come back to you guys and say, hey, you know, nothing ever happened. This was good. But if there, you know, are incidents, whether it's one, two, three, whatever the case may be, we're going to be open about it.
We received a lot of questions during our forum about scripts over at DraftKings. And D. Murphy 104 says, do you think the fact that you allow scripts could raise any red flags during these audits and investigations? And do you guys have any plans to proactively revisit that policy and ban scripting?
So the only scripts, to be clear, that we've allowed are ones that make certain very basic functions on the site easier for people, things like being able to bulk enter contests. And a lot of people are, I think, maybe under the impression that we allow all scripts. We don't. So scripts that, for example, target certain players and when they post games, scoop them or try to, you know, do things like that. Those are always scripts that we have never allowed and engaged them, and they'd already begun that audit. So, you know, I wish that this hadn't happened. And I think, you know, our goal originally, obviously, was to try to do this all in a way that, you know, didn't have to come with a big media uproar. But, you know, it is going to happen, and it's going to, and when it is, I will come back on here and I'll talk to you guys exactly about what we are doing differently, if anything. And, you know, we'll talk to you about what those findings that led to it are. And we're just going to be 100% transparent here. I think that's the only way to make people comfortable.
I feel bad. I dropped out a little bit during your conversation there, but, if they would ask you in, you know, whether it's investigators or these, audit companies and say, this isn't something we think you should be doing, is it Snap automatically not going to allow it?
In the case of something like scripting, if the conclusion that they come to is that we shouldn't be allowing it because it causes some issue that we weren't aware of, then yeah, we would disallow it. So I think that's the case for anything, though. It's not just this. We are going to take the recommendations.
But what if they said, we feel it gives certain people an unfair advantage? Even if your perspective is it doesn't, is that enough for you to change course?
I mean, that's a very interesting question that you ask. So I think the starting point and the obvious stuff is anything that creates any sort of security issue with data, with anything else, that's an obvious get rid of it. As far as just a perception that they may have that it creates an unfair advantage. I think traditionally I might've said, we'll have a discussion about it, but honestly, at this point, we're going to steer so far to the other direction that if that's something that they think, then we probably will do it. You know, I don't know if that's where they're going to come out on that. I think that, you know, it could be either way, but you don't go out and have somebody of their stature come and do an audit and make a bunch of recommendations if your intention is not to keep them. So, if your intention is not to implement them. So, you know, obviously I need to get more specifics before I can come on and say, hey, we did this for this reason, but the general approach is going to be to take whatever they suggest and go forward with it.
Okay, somewhat along those lines, DHP asks, are you concerned that the attorney general or the law firms you hired to investigate DraftKings will find something that confuses them and lead them to jump to unfair conclusions?
DHP asked a serious question.
I know. That's why I had to say it.
I know. That's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if it were someone else doing this, I might feel that way. But we've been working with this firm for a while now. And obviously, you know, we feel a little bit of pressure that we need to accelerate this. But we're always a very deliberate company. It was the same thing I said when I talked about why we wanted to do a full investigation before coming out strongly against Ethan. We have a really thorough approach here. We look at a ton of data. And when we do something, we make sure we feel good about it. So the initial intent was to have a little bit longer process. And the positive to that is that we've already spent some time getting this firm up to speed on our business. They have a pretty good understanding of what we do at this point. And I don't really expect that concern to happen. If it were more of a rush job and we hadn't hired them until, you know, all this happened, then I might have that concern. But because we've been engaging with them for a little while now, I think that's really a non-issue.
All right. We have some questions about the new policy regarding employees, both at your site and from other sites. F. Marriott 22 asks, are the DK pros included in the playing ban? And does that program intend to continue, as a number of people have noticed that the link on the page no longer exists? Tell us about that.
First of all, you know, the notion of DK pros, we're not referring to people that way anymore. I think it was confusing. It sounded like they worked for us or something like that. We are calling them analysts now, the same way, you know, Matthew Berry is an analyst on ESPN and things of that nature for fantasy. So that's really how we view them. They're people who have really good insight into the game because they're good players, and they come on and do content just like Grinders Live and things like that. Mm-hmm. For Roto Grinders, same kind of concept for us, where, you know, written and video content they'll come on and do things for. But they're not here in the office. They're not full-time employees. They have no access to any data. So I don't really think that there needs to be a policy like that for them. In fact, it's sort of like a catch-22, because they couldn't really give good advice if they weren't actually playing the games and doing the research. And, you know, I think that if people have specific questions about them and want, you know, more transparency than we provided about what exactly their role is and how it works, then I am very open to providing that. But what I can say at a high level is what I just said a moment ago. They're not here in the office. They don't have access to any data that the public wouldn't have. They have no rooting interest in the company, you know, having any sort of favoritism towards their games or anything like that, other than the fact that, you know, they want to make money just like everybody else out there. And, you know, I think that really they're just like you guys, only they come on and do shows like Grinders Live and write articles like The Grind Down, but for DraftKings. So, and it's a slippery slope, honestly, to start going that direction. I mean, next thing you'll say, you know, people who write articles for Roto Grinders or do Grinders Live shouldn't be playing. And I think it really just comes down to, if somebody's here in the office, if they have access to data that the public doesn't have access to, it's a clear-cut, you know, reason that they should not be allowed to play anywhere else anymore. And if they don't, then that's not.
Talking with Jason Robbins, CEO of DraftKings, talking about a lot of issues, you know, in the industry and moving forward. Jason, you know, we talked a little bit about it, and you alluded to it kind of in your opening, I hate to say monologue, but you talked about players and, you know, potentially it, you know, somebody, a player wanted to, I guess, give a lineup to a friend or have a relative. I mean, what are the specific policies towards employees? Can their families still play? Could somebody's wife play? I mean, how are you guys going to address that? I mean, you can't be perfect, but there's got to be some sort of stipulations kind of put in place here.
You're exactly right. So right now it is specific to employees, and I think that's the most obvious thing. And we are in an active discussion with FanDuel and other members of the FSTA to determine how to best, you know, complete the circle on that policy. Are there other things like, you know, family members or anyone else that should be prohibited, or is that not something that we should do? How do we enforce this? How do we make sure that, you know, if somebody from FanDuel is playing on DraftKings, we find out about it right away? Those are all important things that we still need to figure out the details on, but rest assured that those discussions are well underway. And, you know, again, we need to be thorough and deliberate here, and we need to make sure that we leave no stone unturned. So we need to answer all those questions, but we also need to make sure we're doing it in a smart way, and that may take a little bit of time.
CU Base 21 asks a question about losing employees here. Has anyone decided to leave DraftKings so they can pursue playing daily fantasy?
Not yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. We, you know, certainly have some people who are very passionate about daily fantasy, and that's one of the reasons they wanted to work at a company like DraftKings. And, you know, overnight we flipped the script and said, hey, you know, can't play anymore. And I think people are still sort of thinking through, because they also feel like this is a company on the rise, and every employee at DraftKings has equity in the company, and you know, I think people have to kind of figure out, you know, what's more important to me and you know, what do I want to do here? And thankfully that hasn't resulted in anyone leaving yet, but I would be surprised if we have some people that leave.
Now, how are you and the other daily fantasy sites planning on handling the situation of employees from other sites who've already qualified for major future tournaments, whether it's the live NFL final or college basketball or college football? There's quite a few of those scenarios that's played out throughout the industry already, but clearly they qualified when they were allowed to play. What's the plan moving forward with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is another one in the column of we are being engaged in active discussion with other members of the industry, and we don't have an answer for that yet. My opinion is that they, if they aren't employed anymore, then that's fine for them to play it. As long as they're still employed, my preference would be to figure out a way to, you know, not have them participate in those, just as I wouldn't want them participating on any of the games on the site today, tomorrow, or any other day. What we have to do is A, get alignment throughout the industry. We've had some initial discussions with FanDuel about it, but we haven't come to any sort of consensus yet. I think we have to make sure we're doing the same thing here. We can't have a different policy than they have. And then the other thing is we have to also really make sure that there's no legal concerns on that front. So we have to, you know, either make sure that's the case or get the consent of these individuals that they are not, you know, we're not doing something that violates anything legally by taking them, you know, away from things that they've already won.
Now, you've got the industry in general has gotten a lot of negative press here, even before, you know, the recent data breach. And how much of that do you think we can attribute to the oversaturation of the advertising by you guys and FanDuel? I mean, I've seen people, you know, major media people put out questions on Twitter. What do you think of Daily Fantasy? Should it be legal or should it not be allowed because the games are sketchy or because there's too many commercials? And it's like 9-1, too many commercials. Any regrets about having as many advertisements as you've had and saturated in the market like you did?
Well, I will say this. I'm much happier that people 9-1 said too many commercials over it's sketchy. I'd take that. That's an easy to fix criticism. You know, it's hard to really say whether I regret it. It's conflicting, right? Because we acquired 9 times as many new players this September as we did last September. We added almost 1 million people in September alone, paid players. And what that's done for the liquidity of our games, for the size of our games, I mean, we're the number one in market now. We weren't before. 2 years ago, we were 5 times smaller than FanDuel. A year ago, we were 2 times smaller than FanDuel. Now we're bigger than them. And that all happened in a very short time frame, largely due to the advertising. So I think that really is something that I'm proud of and that is good for the players that play on DraftKings. There's a lot of new players and a lot of bigger prize pools in there now. So it's conflicting, right? I think that's positive. Obviously, you're right. That I don't know if I would say as much annoyance with commercials, although that's certainly maybe part of it. I think more just when you add that many new customers and you're running ads and so much mainstream media and you're just, you know, running so many of them that it puts you under the spotlight. Much more than it did before. I think a lot of the people that maybe, you know, we were flying under the radar with or that had a perception that, hey, this isn't a very big business yet. Now all of a sudden they probably have the opposite perception, probably too much. They probably think this is a massive business, even bigger than it is. And, you know, wow, how are these guys advertising? Every other commercial is DraftKings or FanDuel ad in the NFL games. And you know, DraftKings is sponsoring Red Zone Channel and DraftKings has this big partnership with ESPN and DraftKings, you know, is in every single Major League Baseball park throughout the league and so on and so forth. They start to have this perception that we're this big Goliath. And, you know, I think that attracts a lot of attention. And certainly some of that attention is going to be positive and some may not be. And, you know, obviously that's something that has created in many cases, as you pointed out, some negative press and some scrutiny. And I wish that weren't the case, but it's hard to say I regret it when we also grew our user base so much in the last month or two and went from being, you know, when we first started, there are probably 15, 20 other companies out there. We've been around, you know, less time than a lot of the other companies that have come and gone since we started. And it's hard to really say I regret that when now we've been able to take over the number one position in the market. And, you know, a lot of that was due to the customer acquisition.
What is your relationship now with ESPN? I mean, we saw they pulled some integration after, you know, the outside the lines investigations. I saw you guys pulled some advertising just a couple of days ago. Is everything on the up and up with that relationship? Are we definitely still going to see the broadcast element to the finals? Talk about that, because obviously it's been an important one for your growth to this point.
Yeah, and I apologize. I do have to go after this question. Oh. So. Maybe if you have one more, but I'm late for another meeting. And I'm also, to be clear, I'm happy to come back on and talk more. I think this is an important discussion, and I want to make sure that, you know, if people have questions I didn't get to, I can come back on and answer those. But to answer your ESPN question, you know, obviously ESPN is a very important partner of ours. They, beyond the business relationship, though, are also a provider of news in the sports industry. And that news needs to be unbiased. It needs to be accurate. And there needs to be no question that the business relationship is interfering with it. And I can tell you from working with them, it's not. In some ways, I wish it was, but it's not. They have a big separation between their news and their advertising relationships and sponsorship and integration relationships. So that's absolutely the case at ESPN, and it's one of the reasons they're a great company and they're respected as far as their ability to provide really accurate and thorough news. And part of, you know, continuing to foster that perception is that it is standard practice for them when they have a partnership like they do with DraftKings and they're covering a big news story around it, that they on a temporary basis pull integrations. It just would look weird and almost make it seem biased if, you know, followed up by a story on the, you know, controversy, there was an integration immediately following it of Matthew Berry picking a lineup. And I think that is a wise policy by them. The good news is that it's day to day. You know, it'll be back on potentially even this weekend, certainly next week, right back to business as usual. So, you know, it makes sense to me that they would want to do that. And I think that it's a very fair thing. And to be 100% clear, it is absolutely not at all an indication that there's anything negative in the relationship. We have as strong and healthy and great a relationship with ESPN as we did before. And I think extremely highly of all the folks that work there. They are a great company of true sports fans, and they get it when it comes to, you know, providing the best possible sports content out there.
Jason, I got one more question, then we'll get out of here because you got to go. According to an article, this is an important one, a lot of people have been asking, this morning in the Boston Globe, this is from BBQ Nut, you appear to feel that DK can regulate itself and that you don't need regulation from outside organizations. Given that you've had at least 2 years to put together proper protections in place for your customers, how do we suppose that we're supposed to trust you moving forward? And my follow-up to that is, given the heavy regulation you're likely going to have when you move into the UK, why is there any opposition whatsoever to regulation?
So just to be clear, I am not opposed. One thing I've learned about the media is that this is kind of interesting. A different person writes the headlines, different copy editor than the authors, the journalists who write the articles. If you read the article, I don't say anywhere in there that I'm opposed to regulation. What I did say was that we are open to it. And I got asked the question, are you in favor of it? And what I said, because I believe this to be the case, is it's not my decision. It's up to the government if they want to regulate me or not. All I can do is say that DraftKings, regardless whether we are regulated or not regulated, has to make a commitment to be state of the art. And the entire industry does, frankly, when it comes to these types of best practices, policies, and procedures. And if we're regulated and that's a means of getting there, then we need to do it. And if we're not, then we still need to do it. And that doesn't mean that I'm not in favor. It doesn't mean I am in favor of it. I just think we need to do it either way. And somehow I think, you know, whoever was writing the headline decided that that meant that I don't think we need it. But that wasn't my intent to say that we didn't need it. My intent was to say we need to do a good job in this area regardless. And I will tell you right here and now, I am very open to regulation. I think that this has been an evolving viewpoint for me, but the reason I'm open to it is that even though I think there are some negatives that come with regulation, I also think that our goal is to make sure that everyone thinks we're transparent, everyone trusts us. And if having some sort of government oversight and regulation helps make that the case, if it builds stronger trust with our players and erases any questions that people have, then that's a good thing. And I have to be aware that, you know, even though maybe I had some negative views in certain places before, that's something I've come to appreciate even more now. And if that ends up being the case and the government decides to regulate us, then I would welcome that. And I would go forward and do absolutely everything they asked us to do.
Jason, thank you so much for jumping on with us. Sorry we don't have more time to talk. Appreciate you coming on, and you know you're more welcome to come back. Would love to maybe chat again when that report comes out, and certainly thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, let me know. We will tell you when we have that report out, and I can come back on and talk about it.
Sounds great. Jason Robbins, and we thank you for watching us here on Grinders Live, and again, you should be able to find this as well in podcast form. Till next time, I'm Dan Bach, and we will see you.
Thanks for listening to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And for up-to-the-minute DFS news, please follow us on Twitter at Roto-Grinders.